Thank you.
So yeah, we're it's 2:32. I think we'll get started. Yes. So,
and I'll start.
Oh, sweetie's gonna lead us in a centering exercise.
Oh, not that. Go ahead and you.
Oh, you
do
want
that.
Me to do that?
Sure. So just do a quick one though.
I'm trying to look at the names here. So just so you know, Rosalind, there's about 125 members on this team, and usually we get anywhere between 10 and 20 people that join us live, and the others just listen to us afterwards. Where is Rosalind? I just
she's
lost
right
her.
There.
Oh, there she is. She's right in the middle. So it's a very informal thing. I told Rosalind I didn't want her to prepare anything. It's simple question answered support. Say hi to this amazing friend of ours. But the way we usually start is we start with a centering exercise. And my guess is if you had Rosalind had technical issues, my heart rate usually goes up when that happens. But we do this every single time we do it anyway. So I'm going to ask us all, unless you're driving, but if you feel comfortable, go ahead and close your eyes. I'm going to shut off my heater.
Yeah, it's hot in here.
It dries my eyes out. So just close your eyes and put your feet on the floor if you're comfortable, or if you're sitting Indian style. Probably Indian style is probably not a good name. Probably can't say that anymore, can we?
Cross-legged.
Cross-legged. Yeah. Here I am, culturally.
Rosalind, did you say cross-legged too?
I said crisscross applesauce.
Crisscross applesauce.
That's more fun.
So let's sit however we feel comfortable. And let's just notice our breath. Let's just not try to breathe any differently. Just notice if it's shallow or deep or quick or long. And as your breath might be slowing down a little bit, just check in with your body. See if there's anything that's feeling tense, some stress maybe, some twisting, some bubbling. Just go ahead and just check in with your body, maybe from the top of your head, slowly down to the bottom of your toes, and just breathe into whatever parts of your body that might need a little bit of And then let's just all do maybe three more full inhale and exhales. And then afterwards, when you're ready, just open your eyes. All right. So thank you everybody for
Todd, what's bubbling?
Bubbling. It's just it's an ING word. Instead of me, what I'm learning in my coach's training certification is it helps to actually describe with words what you're feeling in your body. At least it helps me. So twisting, bubbling, vibrating, any of those ING words.
Bubbling.
It helps me just have some intention on the body awareness that I judge we all have, the intuition that I don't practice very often. But sometimes when I'm closing my eyes in some type of centering exercise, I'm a little bit more aware of it. So thank you for that clarification.
Yes.
So I'm looking at the names up here. It looks like everybody's old school. I'm trying to see if there's anybody new on here. I don't see anybody new other than Rosalind. So I know you want to start, sweetie.
Yeah, if that's all right. I mean, if someone else has a question, but I've been curious about something.
I just want to say, I think Rosalind, and you tell me if you think I'm wrong, sweetie. What? So Kathy and I are in the same room looking at each other right now, just so you know. So
yeah, usually Rosalind's right there.
Yeah, Rosalind.
I know. Yes, I'm pretending I'm in my spot.
I wish you would be there. I think Rosalind is our most famous friend from a Zen parenting podcast standpoint. Would you agree with that?
Well, I think that she's one of the most special people I know, for sure.
I'm talking
Kathy's
about
Kathy's all about substance. No. Yeah. She's all about substance.
I'm that's talking right. about ego-driven
no,
fame.
No, that's the thing is he's like, how many times have you talked to this person? She's special.
I know she's special, and I'm trying to exalt her on this pedestal of New York Times bestseller, blah, 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 blah.
Right. Blah, blah, blah.
Yes.
Because it changes every part of life.
And I asked Rosalind to do this right either before or after the interview we did for Zen Parenting Podcast. And I just want to be clear. She said yes without conditions. But what I want to make sure I do by the end of this is promote these little tiny guides. Are they called tiny guides, Rosalind? Tiny guides. And I'm going to share my screen and show you guys what I'm talking about. But I don't want to do that right now. We'll do that on the other side of it. But anyways, so I didn't get any questions emailed to me. And sometimes that happens and sometimes that doesn't. And maybe this is going to be a discussion. Maybe you guys have questions. But sweetie, why don't you first go ahead and, unless somebody's not familiar with Rosalind, what her specialty is. And
well, you know, Rosalind, it's interesting. It's like a good question because obviously we know your books, you know, and you have this connection and this communication with teenagers and also talking to educators and also talking to parents. And Rosalind's organization is called Cultures of Dignity. It's my favorite organizational name out there. And so she has all this awareness of everything going on with our teenagers. But when someone asks you your specialization, do you say teens or do you say relationships? Like, how do you, what's your elevator speech?
I think my elevator speech is I'm a bridge between young people and the people who care about them and work with them. I think that's one elevator speech. I think the other is I'm trying to bring dignity into our communities so we can repair them and be stronger and be able to take care of each other better. And that obviously includes our children. But I think as I work in this field more and more, I think it's also just, it's this focus on repairing of our villages, which really drives me.
I love that repair. 'Cause that's it. It's like, it really is. It's not just one. The bridge doesn't go one way. It's like our parents back to our teens back to our parents, the parents to the educators, the teens to, I mean, it's all, you know, it's all sorts of different layers. So on that note, like, Rosalind's most recent book, which is called The Distance Learning Playbook, which is what we talked about, you know, when she was on the show a month or so ago. So my question for you, Rosalind, now that we have some light at the end of the tunnel, you know, some vaccines, I actually got a text today that my mom, who lives in a nursing care facility, is about to get a vaccine. So, I mean, that's news. I know. I mean, and when I say about, it could be another week, but just the fact that they've already like done the paperwork. I'm like, what? You know, however, here for her, at least. And so, but speaking as far as parents and educators and what's happened in the last year, what do you think has worked? I'm going to start with the positive first. Obviously, I want to know what the greatest struggles have been, but when it comes to education and kids and even how parents are involved, what has worked? What should we hold on to?
Can I? That's like the hardest question.
I know.
You told me, Todd, I didn't have to prepare for that. What has worked? I mean, sometimes, honestly, I hate when people say, honestly, it's so funny that I just said that. And the reason I don't like it is the reason of why I just said it, which is that I don't want to tell the truth.
Right. Tell us the truth, even if it's not that great.
Yeah. It's always, whenever anybody has to say to be transparent or can I be honest with you? You know, those kinds of things, right? I always am like, okay, that's suspect right there. And that's exactly what I did. Mm-hmm. So I just found myself doing that. So the reason is because I have struggled to find an answer for you, for myself, without feeling like, you know, because I work with teenagers so much, I think one of the reasons why is I always have this very, very healthy, sometimes not so healthy dose of cynicism. And so in this case, Kathy, to answer your question, I think when I talk to teachers, which I do every day, and I'm doing professional development with them several times a week, that when I'm saying to them, you know, what are the things that you want to commit to that you've learned from this year? Or I've been saying to them recently in the last couple of weeks, there is no redo here. We're not getting a redo. This is not, you know, this is just a fact. We're not getting a redo. We're just moving forward. And we have to figure out what and how we want to move forward. But I often catch myself feeling like, okay, I really am meaning this is an opportunity to think about things in a different way. And I mean it, but at the same time, I also feel like I'm one of those, it feels like a Hallmark card sometimes where you're like desperately trying to figure out and force like, what is the positive that comes from here? My biggest hope is that because we have a first lady who's going to care about education, that maybe we can have an opportunity and have national leadership to truly learn from this opportunity and move forward and actually address the inequities that we have in education that this pandemic completely exposed. That was, you know, so that's my gosh. I mean, the answer to your question is the moment when I actually got tears in my eyes watching, because I was really worried, and today is probably the best day that I haven't been worried, to tell you the truth.
Me too.
But when Biden said you're going to have a teacher in the White House, I just started bawling. So yeah, Kathy, I mean, I guess the thing that, tomorrow, I'm going to stop after this because I'm stuttering. And the reason it's such a struggle is that tomorrow I'm going to do a exercise with a school that I'm working with the entire district, where I'm going to have them write on a piece of paper all of the things that they lost control of that they frankly probably really didn't ever have in the first place, but we can trick ourselves when we're teachers sometimes. But what were the things that we did, that we forced, that we had to admit that we did not have control over this fall? And then we have to let it go and we have to get to peace with that. And then we have to figure out what we commit to that we do have control over. So I guess the thing I would say is, I'm coming full circle, is that it is clear, I think, to everyone, or mostly everyone in the country, how important social emotional learning and regulation is in school. Maybe that's the long-term benefit, is that parents across political spectrums, and I do work with people across the political spectrum that, and in very religious schools and all different kinds of stuff like that, that I think it's really clear to people about how important emotional management regulation is for academic participation.
Oh, me too.
And boy, that took me a long time to get to that. Sorry, Kathy.
Well, why do you think I'm asking you the question? I'm like, I don't know how to say, because again, I'm not working in the same capacity you are, just in my own community and with my own clients, where in my own girls and their friends, like, you know, I'm just kind of experiencing this too. But do you think, this is kind of like, I guess, a bigger question, do you think that curriculum will change at the, like when you're becoming a teacher, and again, not just in our schools, but like, do you think becoming a teacher, the curriculum that's learned in universities will change?
I hope so. We're trying our hardest. My organization is actively, and there's a lot of people who are trying to change what's happening in teacher colleges. It has always been baffling to me, and that's like the best, nicest way that I can say the word. It has been baffling to me that that there is any teaching certification program that does not first and foremost teach social emotional regulation of oneself when you're working with young people, and also how to read the social dynamics of the classroom.
Right.
How to understand what happens, or why young people want to participate or why they don't. Your subject matter expertise is really, it just baffles me. And I think the answer, this is when I get pessimistic, the answer is that we'd rather go to things that we don't like to, education is a really, really big boat to move. Mm-hmm. And it has proven to be very stubborn, and it's very stubborn because of the inequities of the system,
right,
about who gets resources and why, because it's so tied to our zip code. So, so to make systemic change can be really, really difficult. So I'm so hoping, and I'm going to try everything I can to be able to contribute to teaching schools, changing the way that they require what is required for teachers.
Great. Thank you.
So just for everybody else, so if somebody thinks they have to ask a question about what we're talking about, just so everybody knows, Rosalind is a mom. She's written books about
sure.
sons, daughters, kids. teenagers. So, and you know, it could be a question that you might ask Kathy and I, maybe Kathy and I and Rosin will all kind of team up to support. So, because I think people are a little shy that they want to ask the right question to Rosin.
Yeah.
So,
it's not about that. You guys don't have to ask about the educational system. That's selfish of me. I'm just curious because I have
Kathy.
Yeah. And if you're, if you're struggling, you know, cause a lot of people say I'm struggling with my toddler, I'm struggling with my teenager, I'm struggling with my husband. If you all have those questions, please let me know. Okay. Hallie just said something. Yeah, she it was privately, but I don't think she's. But before I go to Hallie, I just want to say that I kind of feel like this. Let me know if this makes any sense. I have a friend who's an emergency room doctor, and he told me about what he learns in medical school has nothing to do with health and fitness. He is there to figure out what's wrong and try to fix it. And I feel in the same way, like the fact that SEL is not like a foundational value in helping our teachers in the classroom. And maybe I assume that that's not what happens. I don't know what it's like to be in a teacher school, but it's like, and I, and you know, in SEL, what little I know about it, if there is any of it in the curriculum, it's on Friday at the end of the day and nobody really cares. And they just do like one exercise. One thing my wife has taught me is that it has to be built into everything that you do. So when you're talking about geometry, can you bring in SE, like all that? So I just wonder, does that comparison make sense of like the doctors are working on the wrong thing and these poor teachers who are mostly trying their best have to like teach to the test and all the brokenness of the system. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, definitely. And it's why a lot of teachers burn out because they, I mean, think about the words that before the pandemic that we would, when teachers would burn out, like the kids are entitled or the kids are rude. Or the kids, and entitled is a very, very loaded word. And so, but really what this goes back down to is that very rarely do teachers get the training to manage themselves and the classroom, regardless of what they're teaching. And if they had that, then they would be a lot less nervous about when classes sort of spiral out of control, which happens, and then they get blamed for it. So like, how did you not know how to control 18 people or 25 people that are in mid-adolescence? How did you not know how to control that? But you weren't trained for it. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, you were trained to teach math or teach some kind of Spanish conjugation, but you weren't taught how to manage group dynamics. And yet we blame teachers when they can't manage group dynamics. So it's, and of course, understandably, then they revert back to this control and compliance model, which makes young people disengage from learning. So it's really like that's why, for example, in what I do is more and more and more actually is not student facing work. Like not, I don't do, even before the pandemic, like I wasn't doing, or I was doing less and less of actually interacting with like big scale things with students. The most that I was doing and increased it, and we continue to just increase this as of what we do, is to empower the teachers with the tools to be able to then bring it into their classrooms so they feel more in control and the kids feel more, they feel more treated with dignity, but they also feel like, you know, when conflict happens, which is inevitable in a classroom where a kid gets frustrated at a teacher, even if they can go and talk to they can manage it better on themselves, and they know when to talk to a parent, and they know better what to say to a parent instead of saying things like, I'm so stressed, or, you know, I hate this assignment, or I'm so bored, because those things are really important to actually unpack what those mean, because I'm so stressed, for example, could mean many, many things. So it's setting up the teacher and the child, and then therefore, of course, the parent for success in the entire relationship. And that's really, so for me, for example, to go do like a anti-bullying presentation or a cyberbullying presentation or a relational aggression or whatever those things are, my hope is that when we get, that we are really understanding the limitations of that, of those, that kind of work. And also the amazing opportunity for more integrated work. I mean, and I guess the last thing also, you didn't bring this up, but it's very much top of mind, is that many of the schools that I'm working with have decided that they need to do diversity and equity inclusion work, which is awesome, but they're very rarely tying it to social emotional skill building. So that, you know, for example, I was just talking to a school in Boston yesterday, and it's an all boys school, and they are not surprisingly having significant problems in the boys group chats with like racist comments and sexist comments, but racist comments were apparent, were the things that were really coming to the fore. And the school had just spent a lot of money and time on diversity and equity inclusion work. And when I asked them about, well, what did they teach the faculty and then therefore the students about what were the skills that the faculty needed or the young people, the students needed when they were in the moment so they could identify and understand what was happening, but the skills to be able to change the group dynamic so that you could have like the dignity of all people rise in that moment, training didn't include that. So you can give people awareness, but if you don't tell them how to change things, they're not. In fact, they'll be feeling disempowered by it and feeling like, well, what can I possibly do? I now know what the problem is, but I can't do anything about it. So it's, I hope we can tie those things more explicitly together.
Yeah. And I think what you're saying is awareness is step one, but execution or like taking this awareness.
New skills.
And
yeah.
And you can, so, yeah. All right. So everybody's less shy now, which is good. So we're going to go to Holly and then Melanie and then Nikki and then Ginny. So I'm going to unmute.
Bring it on.
If I can find.
You can ask me anything.
I'm right here.
Oh, there. Hi, Holly. Come on in.
Hi. And I talked to you guys about this before. It's about my son. He's 13. And when I originally asked Kathy and Todd, I was like, what can I do about my son? And I realized I needed to reformat the question, what can I do on myself? Because I'm finding myself getting really triggered by the fact that he just isn't doing his homework. He was really great until a certain point and then just like, yeah, I'm going to get it done, but doesn't. And, you know, lots of emails from teachers and special meetings. And I struggle with thinking like the right thing to do is start taking away everything, you know, bringing the hammer down. And that just feels so horrible and damages the relationship I have with him. So I want to like, how hard do we push? How much do we step back? Like
he's 13.
Do the right thing. Sorry.
He's 13.
Yeah. He's 13. He's in seventh grade.
Was he like this before the online learning?
No, not that I knew of. No, it really started in March when it had to go online. Yeah, for sure.
Have you acknowledged for him or asked him the specific reasons why he doesn't like online learning?
He says he does. He prefers to be at home.
He's tricky. So he says that he likes the online learning, but he's not doing the work.
Right.
Okay. So I would point out to him that there is an inconsistency that is a mysterious inconsistency between the two. Right. Like,
yeah.
Like I would call it a mysterious inconsistency of, well, you say you liked it. So this is really difficult for me to understand. So you say that you like it, but you're not doing it. So explain to me why that's happening. Cause I'm just, you need to explain this to me. I need to so basically here's the thing. I should have backed up a second. When you're dealing with somebody who's like a 13-year-old boy, I think that you should be really clear before you talk to him about like, what's one thing you could change this in the middle of the conversation, but try not to of like, what's the one thing that you want him to know about you or about the situation based on your conversation. I also think that you should be very careful about not having a list of I'm guessing from the way you just said that he's super verbal, like argues, is a good debater.
Yeah, she nodded her head, yes.
Oh, okay, she nodded her head, okay.
Sorry, I'm muted because my dog is freaking out.
Oh, so. Yeah, okay, so when you're dealing with somebody who's like a good debater, always, there's so many things to say. Okay, I have to choose. No, and I'm a little scattered right now, so I have to focus on because there's so many different things with the debaters. Number one, there's two reasons why they ask the question why. One is because they genuinely want to know the answer. And the other is because they want to beat you down by constantly asking you why so that you finally capitulate and let them do what they want to do. So I, with a kid like that, specifically ask them, are you asking me why? Because you want to know the answer. Are you asking me why? Because you want to beat me down so that I stop bothering you or get what you want. So just tell me what the reason is. Just tell me which one it is. That's the first thing. So, and then of course, if he's just trying to beat you down, then you stop the conversation at that moment and say, okay, so I'm not gonna be beaten down in this situation, but you're very, very good at doing it. So I'm gonna take a pause in the conversation. So you can acknowledge like how exhausting he is. But you need to live to fight another day. So it's, I'm gonna take a pause right now. I need to meet with you probably after dinner, like at 7:30 tonight. Is that a good time for you? Right. So come up with a time. You're giving him limited options. If he's asking you why, because he really doesn't understand, which actually might be, I would really encourage you to just keep asking him what specifically is it that he needs the answers about. You're asking him to get more emotionally granular, which Todd actually referenced in the very beginning. So that's one thing when you're talking to him. Second is that you decide what's your agenda for what you want to say to him. You explain one thing that's bothering you, not five things, like one or two of what you're confused about or what you're worried about. You do not give a long list. And then you don't get into a debate with him about the merits of your argument that way, of your one or two things. And then I would say, so I'm confused by this and we got to figure this out, because either I let you fail, I would actually say, I can't control whether I can't force you to do this work or not. So I'm in a situation where I let you fail, I watch you fail. I don't let you fail. I watch you fail and we deal with the consequences of that, or you take more control of your life and you decide how you want to change the situation. I'm going to walk away right now. Don't wait for him to answer you in that moment. I'm going to say, just think about that. I'm going to walk away. I'm going to do something. And then I'm going to come back in a half hour and let's regroup on this. And you can tell me what you think. Cause you want to, you really need him. It's a lot to process for him, no matter how verbal he is, or no matter how good he is at manipulating you. You need to actually give that information and walk away and then come back to him and let him judge, let him process, and then have the conversation again. And no siblings, by the way, if you have them around.
Yeah. So, he has an older sister.
Yeah. Yep. None of that. There's none of that. No older sister. Cause older sisters can be super, I am one, can be super bossy, opinionated, like can't stop talking, can't help but inject themselves in the conversation. So she cannot be around.
Gotcha. Okay. That's fantastic. Thank you.
Thank you, Holly. Before we go to Melanie, sweetie, do you want to make any comment? I love Rosalind.
No, I love that. What I love is I love all those parts, but that second part where you say, I can either watch you fail and have to stand by, because that language, I just saw it more visually, or, you can take control, because that's I think, Rosalind, the thing that always comes up in Team Zen and with all my clients is how do I get my kid to, kid not do this, as if the parents in school, not yours. And it is something you need to be, you are in relationship with your child. And so, yes, this is a conversation, but it really isn't your assignment. So your language was that's really good. Everyone should write that down.
Thanks, Rosalind. And it's very practical. I know sometimes I give the advice of trying to take ownership over how you don't role model the behavior that you want to see in your kids. And that was really tight and precise. So thank you for that. It's really helpful. Let's go over to Melanie. Hi, Melanie.
No. Hi.
Hi.
Go. One second.
All right. We'll come back.
You can just come right back. Don't worry about it.
Yeah. Love it. So Nikki, I don't know if you want to talk, Nikki, but I'm going to read what you wrote. And Nikki, if you want to chime in afterwards, that's good. Nikki says, my kids struggle with debilitating anxiety, not COVID related, that impacts ability to be in school. Despite them wanting to be there for social life, would love to hear your thoughts. Is that question complete enough for you to answer, Rosalind, or would you
do more? I mean, it's a big question. How old is the person? How old is the child?
I don't know, and I don't see Nikki. I think she walked away from her computer.
I think Nikki's kids are teenagers. And again, I think one's an older teen and one's more in the 14 level.
Yeah. Where is that book that I like so much? I'm all about small acts of courage for young people. And because I think they their brains scoot ahead because they want to please themselves or they want to please us. And they think of these, what is the marker of success that I've handled my anxiety that I've handled my anxiety productively. So I'm all about what is the smallest act of courage that you can do to help you manage yourself? I have, we have this thing in cultures called Navigating Politics with Dignity, and we have two young women who run it. I basically take notes and argue with them, but they run it. And one of them, very successful young woman, half of the time that we start our meetings, she has had a panic attack that day. And we have to, I mean, I always do intention setting like Todd and Kathy do, but I'm just really aware of through the pandemic of having to, and I am better about this actually. So this is a positive about online learning, is that I'm much more focused on grounding and checking in with the kids and seeing like where they are with their anxiety level. And this young woman is habitually anxious as well. Star student on every kind of committee you could possibly be on. So I just think small acts of courage, like for her, this my student, she just says, it's fine. And my job is to say, no, actually, like, let's slow it down and let's acknowledge that it's not okay right now. But, you know, and this is, of course, the most important thing about feelings like this is that these are powerful feelings, but they don't have to be permanent. And one of the ways in which they're not permanent is if we slow down and pause and acknowledge them. And then we get much more granular about what is it exactly that's making us feel this, you know, this weight on our chest or whatever it is, so these are the things that I do with my students. But, you know, I would say for your daughter, I think for your daughter's son, I can't remember, is that the re-entry to school is going to be probably a pretty big transition for this person. So I think the most important thing is visualizing a ritual or routine that they can imagine starting in school again, because we're almost done, but going through the routine and looking at throughout my day, what is the smallest act of courage? And then also for me, the focus I always go back to is happiness is five components. It is, which I sometimes can only remember four, but it is a sense of purpose, contributing to something bigger than oneself, meaningful social connection, which means that somebody who's highly anxious should not be scrolling Instagram for like comparing themselves to people constantly, a curiosity and a place to process and find peace. And so I, with all kids, but especially with that kind of a person, especially if they're a teen, I'm going to focus on you don't have to hit all five of them every day, but how do we create a routine for you that helps you hit those things so that it gives a sense of structure to the feelings that you're having and a place to process. And again, just the more you can define those feelings and get more granular, and the more you remember they're real, but they're not permanent. That's what I do with young people. Like that's my, you know, there's so much out there about what to do, but that's what I keep focused on with them.
I love that.
Before we go over to Ginny, you just quickly ran through that. And I think it bears repeating, five different contributing factors of happiness. And maybe we can do this together. Can you do your best to rattle one more time?
Sure. It's sense of purpose, you know, or meaning beyond oneself. It is meaningful social connection. So Instagram for me, you've got a young person is going to debate me to death when Instagram is a meaningful social connection. I think it's more of a thing that undermines your sense of self and sense of security. So meaningful social connection, hope of success, something that you feel that you can be curious about, and a place to process and find peace.
Nice. All right, thank you. I just wrote that down for the show notes. Okay. So
I wanted to share one really quick thing. This is actually about my daughter, not about me, but just a couple of days ago, she decided that she was feeling pretty anxious about going to this tumbling class. She's learning how to flip. I always call it a flip. What does she call it?
She gets mad because I call it a back handspring
and
turnover.
Like, that's not it. We have to get the right word, but she didn't want to go to this class, but she felt bad. I didn't care. There was nothing about it with me, but she felt bad in herself. And so she decided not to go because her knee hurt. And then she said, but I have to do something else brave today. to fill that spot. And so she figured out when she was going to get her driver's license, which I was like, I learned in that moment. Cause she's like, she's basically saying, I feel like shit because I am bailing on this. So I need to fill this void with something else. So, you know, it's just playing with that kind of, I like your language. Cause I didn't really see what she was doing, but she was like, I need a small act of courage to, you know, so anyway.
Okay. So we are going to head on over. Melanie, are you ready? I'm going to unmute you. Hang on a second. Let me see. There you go. Hi.
Hi. Sorry about that.
That's okay.
So mine is kind of a general question, more of if you can offer some helpful hints or advice. I have three boys. My oldest, who is very similar to the other mom's question earlier. And so I will be using all that information regarding my oldest. But my biggest question is, what are things I can do to help them be more comfortable, and just what can I do as a parent, as a mother, to help them learn more about their social emotional ability?
I mean,
just for them to be a little more, even just open to learning about it. I have the oldest just turned 14. I have an eighth grader, sixth grader, and fourth grader.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cause there's so much pressure on them to not care.
Right.
And so one of the things actually I would say as a mother of two young men, older teenagers, is that I just had the experience recently of realizing, because one was writing their college essays, that and he had me read it, and I realized in the college essays that they had been listening to me and my husband. I had that moment of like, oh, you totally were listening to me. Oh my God. But of course I don't say that, but I was like, oh my God. Oh my God. And it was things I'd said to him when he was 14, by the way.
Okay, because I was going to say, I haven't had that moment yet.
Yeah, no, well, you don't know. That's the thing.
You don't know.
Now, my older son would say, and you also don't know the other things that you've said that have, like, destroyed us, that you will, right? Like, they make jokes about that kind of stuff a lot. But I think the research is pretty clear that it helps a lot to, if they're getting, if it's valued at school, it helps a lot. But what you're going up against is a culture that, you know, we don't have, and I'm not just talking, by the way, like, we don't have a lot of role modeling about how to be like a strong man who is really emotionally engaged. I mean, and that's, you know, Todd Wright does a lot of that work and wonderful work at that. I'll tell you what we did for summer camps, but one of the most important things that we did besides role modeling that like my husband talked about frequently or consistently when it would come up, not like, you know, banging him overhead with it, but the struggles he had had as a young person, especially with his dad, who was really emotionally disconnected. And when it was appropriate, he would just talk about it, but for a very short amount of time. The other thing I should have said about, you know, that I could say that about, oh my gosh, I'm losing my train of thought, not my train of thought, my ability to speak, is that you really need to talk to your boys in like 3-minute increments. Because moms tend to have a lot of words, so many words that it's just too many words, and then they just shut down. And so I really want us to be mindful of how many words, because we tend to think that if we keep repeating ourselves or we give them a lot of words that they're going to, that helps them to understand, when actually it shuts them down. So that's why I want you to be really clear with them about, before you start talking to boys about this kind of stuff, about what you want, what's your agenda here. And so one of the things that you might want to do, this is one of my like tricks or strategies when I'm talking to students or my own children, is to say, what do you think I think is important about how you show up in the world or how you are a young man? I would like to like, what do, cause then you're getting from them how they're interpreting you. And your family values. And I want you also to focus on, this would be for any family, is to focus on principles instead of what traditionally are values, family values, because principles guide behavior and decisions. And rules and principles and things that you decide in your family, if they're based on strong principles, then they make sense, even if the kids don't agree with them or don't like them. But so what I mean by that is a principle that I use in my family and in my company is listening is being prepared to be changed by what you hear. Mm-hmm. Another principle is no one knows everything. Together, we know a lot. So if you just take those, a third one that's important for this is we want to be easy on people and hard on ideas, which allows for people to make mistakes, but we can be rigorous about thinking about, well, what was the idea or what was the behavior that we want to challenge? And over all of that is the principle of dignity is not negotiable. Dignity is worthy, is like inherent worth of people. And so for your boys, when you talk about family principles, that is something that boys, because they're very, in general, tend to be very focused on. They want to see consistency. Girls do too, but they're obviously, but like there needs to be consistency of like, what does my mom stand for? What are the principles she stands for? And then if you ask them that question, and then you are listening to being prepared to be changed by what you hear, you can have a much more interesting dialogue than you telling them things. I don't think telling boys anything for the most part works. I've had very little success. I've done it many times, made the mistake many times. I don't think it works. I think it's saying to them, what is your experience of being in this family? I don't want to hear about that. And so that's what I would do. And then the concrete thing, which I skipped over, is that my husband and I both, and it was his leadership, he sent them during the summers for like a week thing for these, oh my gosh, I can send them to Kathy and Todd. They sort of were wilderness retreats, but they were much more about masculinity and learning to be capable, but also, you know, in the woods and that kind of stuff. But it was also run by men that were really clear about connecting courage with emotional resilience and emotional connection with other people. And so we've sent my older son to it. And, you know, it really took a while, and he's really good right now, but he had a rough road. And we sent him to one of those things for like 2 weeks when he was 15, and it totally changed his life.
Wow. So that's a bunch of really good information. And for me, I have a few questions I want to follow up with you, Rosalind. One is the idea of taking the kids into the woods and all that. Like I belong to this organization called Mankind Project. And the foundation of this organization is that they do this thing called New Warrior Training Adventure. And it's basically when the guys, it's a weekend retreat, but it's really challenging and difficult in the same way that you're describing your sons did when they were teenagers. And in our society, this does not happen typically for our sons. And if you go back in generations and Native American and all that, like the men would come and go get their sons from their moms and go take them out on a vision quest, some type of adventure. And what this international men's organization that I'm a part of has initiated 60,000 men. I'm one of them. And it's because this never happened when I was a little kid. So kudos to your husband for having the foresight to know that something like that is important. And then a few other, you know, nuggets that I really love what you said, 3-minute increments. Like I would even say 1-minute increments, like
three's a lot.
And then giving it back to them. What do you think? I think is important. I think that's wonderful. But the last thing I want to ask you, because I do view you as an expert on this. When I present to young people, 5th graders, 6th graders, 8th graders, I would put pictures in my presentation about celebrities right now that embody healthy masculinity. And I would put up pictures of Lin-Manuel Miranda or The Rock or LeBron, who, you know, do a picture of LeBron doing yoga. Is there any other obvious, because even these guys are criticizing me for being The Rock because The Rock is old school and John Cena is like the new version of The Rock. Is there anybody obvious I'm missing as far as role models for a 13-year-old boy to see healthy masculinity that pops to your mind off the top of your head?
That's interesting. They're not right now.
Which is
unfortunately
sad, right?
I'm not. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure I'm wrong. I just, What comes to mind is it's a complicated conversation because, okay, so Harry Styles is on the cover of Vogue and that's a thing. And, you know, what is it? And so that goes to, well, what does it really mean to take a risk? And what does it mean to be courageous? And I don't know, like, I look at people like that and I know, you know, okay, so he gets flack for it from some people, but I just don't think, I guess what I think is that I'm looking for people that are closer to home. Mm-hmm. I think that's what's important because boys so desperately want to be in relationship with people and with men that they can respect. And respect meaning, as Kathy and Todd know, like, I'm hugely into the word, like, understanding the actual word respect, which is often co-opted and misused and abused in our culture. So that we often are being forced to show respect to people who don't treat other people with dignity. And so boys are just, they just shine when they can be in relationship with people that they truly respect because that person is capable and is treating other people with dignity. And so I think we should be, that's why I want boys, because of how important relationships are for them, I want us to focus on finding the people that meet that criteria for them, but also being able, just as importantly, to acknowledge to young men, that they can be and probably have been, by the time they're 15, been in situations where they've seen men who they were forced to show respect to that they don't respect. And they probably have very good reason for that. Like, reason where you would say, yeah, I agree. And so then we're in a situation of forcing boys to show respect to people because those people are abusing the position they have to get away with bad behavior. I don't think any truthful conversation with boys about their emotional lives and their experiences it has to include that because otherwise I think boys don't engage in a way that they actually want to. But when we really talk about those dynamics of respect and how often that's used to dominate other people, I think boys get really curious and really interested in the conversation very quickly. And then you can have these deep conversations with young men that are like 15 years old. They're like, are you kidding me? The only thing I've seen you do recently is play 2K or I don't know, whatever video game you've been doing.
Yeah, I remember, and then I want to see if you have any thoughts, sweetie, but I remember you saying when I read Masterminds and Wingmen that you did say, like, these boys are deep. Like, there is significant depth to these young men if we can cultivate it. And the problem is in our society is that there's, you know, that gets pissed on, like, any type of vulnerability, you get made fun of. So, but if the boys can feel like they're not going to be judged, and they're instead going to be accepted and loved for whatever happens to show up, which could be expression of fear or sadness or whatever it is, then it's in there. So I think boys get a bad rap. We just need to figure out a better way of creating a space for them to show up who they were when they were 4 years old and that they have since forgotten. So, sweetie.
Well, I just want to reiterate something that Rosalind said, not only to Malini here, but for everybody to take this into account, is she said the first thing is listening, is being prepared to be changed by what you hear. Mm. The reason why that is so important, a lot of you ask questions about, you know, here's our rules and then here's the consequence and then we're going to punish and this is what we're going to do. And there's no, if you can come at it instead about listening and having an exchange of ideas, I'm not saying that there may not be consequences for your children's behavior, but you're going to have a better opportunity for them to share a lot of aspects of why they did things, you know, going back to the original question, why they showed up a certain way or didn't show up a certain way, what happened, what they saw. And you're having a communication, which is always what Todd and I are talking about in relationship with our kids, is it's communication and connection. It's not overpowering and control and punishment, because then the only relationship you're going to have with them is, do you win or do they win? So a lot of you ask, you know, don't I need to maintain my same rules? And they need to know this happens. But really, it's not that there's not consequence. It's just that asking them to tell you first, and maybe you'll be changed by why they did. They may tell you something where you're like, well, I didn't know that part. You know, like, that part I didn't know. And you're opening the door for them to tell you, this is why I said this. This is why I didn't do this. This is why I didn't clean my room. You know, it can be really basic stuff. And that opportunity to really demonstrate to them that you're listening and that what they said altered the way you felt, then they will be more likely to be altered by what you say. Do you see? Like it's so I just really, I wrote that down because I'm going to put that on my board of remembering that and sharing that. Thank you, Roslyn.
Okay. So I think we got one more question, and then I do want to share some of the resources that Roslyn is offering. I actually got an email today. They have some holiday sale. So a $3 book is going to go to $1.40 or something like that.
I know. We see your stuff everywhere. We're like, there's her book. So there's Roslyn.
Yeah. If we see it in the library. We see it all over the emails from our schools. Like she, I don't know.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. It's all over. So we're going to go to Jenny, and then
Thanks, Millie. Thank you.
Millie's got it. I love it.
Millie's got it. There you go. Okay. Jenny, I'm trying to unmute you. Come on. There we go. Hi.
Hi.
What's up?
Okay. We just had packages delivered, so the dogs were barking. So we're all good now. Okay. So, hello, Roslyn. I hope that this question is okay. It's more parenting. Kind of as a broad question. So my husband and I have been, I really like Ross Green's teachings, kind of going the route of having conversations, you know, plan B versus that authoritarian, you know, you're not doing this on time or you're not doing what I say right when I say it. So we're going to punish by taking something away, right? Or grounding or whatever. So that would be kind of his more automatic route. And I've kind of brought in this, you know, more thoughtful approach, right? Which I, you know, really appreciate the weekly refreshing, you know, podcasts and so forth and being able to talk here. But it is just a constant struggle for us to try to get on the same page because, you know, when the kids don't get to bed on time or, you know, they don't clean the bathroom perfectly the way that they've been taught to do it, you know, all the things, all the skills in life, right? That we're, it's our job, in my mind, it's our job to load it on the front end, set them up for success using scaffolding, teaching, and all of that. And having conversations. So when there's a challenge in my mind, I'm like, well, there's a reason why they're not following through. And so we need to sit down and have a conversation with them and have them share, right? Their ideas, their perspectives, maybe how they can, you know, engage a little bit more. It's my husband, Tim.
Hi.
So getting us on kind of the same page where I believe that that conversation and front loading things, right?
Is
an action, is the action to take. And then, you know, and then from that conversation, developing, you know, the next plan.
So can I just ask a question? Where's your husband in the back?
Yeah.
Okay. Hi, husband. What's your name?
Tim.
Tim, right. So Tim, do you think that the kids work her?
I think they probably work me more than her, but yes.
Oh,
they work.
Sweet. Okay. Jenny, I agree with you. And so there's time and place, absolutely time and place. So you want to negotiate about, and I actually don't know if this is what you meant, but I'll take a step back and sort of give my thinking about it. Our kids, and we can't take this personally, and we cannot take this personally, that they are going to try and get out of pretty much doing any kind of work ever, right? Like loading the dishwasher, cleaning the kitty litter, doing their laundry, walking the dog, picking up the dog poop in the yard, like cleaning up their clothes, whatever. I mean, endless, right? Using our stuff, putting it back, like all that kind of stuff. I have had to, there's a couple things. I've had to remind myself, especially during the last 9 months, that I am their teacher throughout their lives. And we are, and I don't want to have long conversations in the moment because we're going to have endless conversations about and opportunities to learn about putting the dishes in the dishwasher. I mean, I've had that conversation with them. I mean, it doesn't even matter how many times I've had it, but we're going to keep having it. And so my Jenny, very similar to you, the way I say it is, my job in life is to have my two boys be good roommates for other people. You know, like when you went like out of college, in college or after college, and there was the kid who was like the worst roommate, like took your food, left their stuff everywhere, borrowed stuff without telling anybody, didn't care, didn't pull their weight, all that stuff. My job, our together is like, we will do our best to have these two people be good roommates once they leave the house. And then my husband has been very focused forever on entirely on the theme of, we are in community with each other. That is what we do. We are in community. And as such, you have responsibilities to the community. And which is not to say that we aren't incredibly frustrated constantly by the things that they do, like take tools and not, and leave them behind, like leave them where they were. So for me, what it is there is a time and place when we have negotiations. If they have not done their chores, and they're consistently not doing it, and I'm getting really angry. I mean, these are all things I've completely had the personal experience with. I need the job done at the moment, and then we can talk about the problem or the stuff, Jenny, you're talking about, well, I need to understand what the situation is or what's going on or anything like that. I want to understand that later. I don't want to understand that in the moment. I want the job done because I've been working my tail off, whatever you're doing, whatever anybody else is on doing. You have been working so hard all day to create a healthy family, to put food, everything, right? So the negotiation is not then. The negotiation is, let's set up a time that is mutually good for both of us, where we can focus and we can prepare what we want to talk about. So we will set up a time to talk about it. And then when you get to the time to talk about it, I want to really hear from you exactly what you don't like, exactly what you want to happen instead. So you're suggesting a different way to do it. And then we will talk about it. And you could even really structure it. If you've got siblings who are fighting about chores or whatever, is you can structure it where, like, okay, you now have 1 or 2 minutes. Each person's going to get literally 2 minutes to talk about their side of the story, their side. And then each person can ask clarifying questions, which is different from curious clarifying questions in comparison to non-curious questions. So clarifying questions is, I really want to understand this more. Non-curious questions are basically, I think you're stupid, and I think your position is stupid. And so my question's going to hide as like a way to put you down. Mm-hmm. So we have to be very, that's a way to clarify for parents. Like, these are the principles, basically. That's a principle. This is how we behave. We ask clarifying questions, not non-curious clarifying questions.
Can I ask a clarifying question?
You go from there. So that's Jenny. I just think it's time and place, because otherwise you're going to get caught. We have many very verbal, sophisticated kids who know us really well, so that they can get away with what they want to get away with. And we can't take it personally, but we do need to see what's in front of us. And so you can say, yeah, we can talk about this, but not right now, because right now I need you to do this thing. Then we can talk about it later. So I just want to be able to have good boundaries for you about how to be the ethical authority figure that you want to be, while maintaining and taking care of yourself and your husband, so that you're presenting as a united front.
Can I ask a clarifying question?
Yes, Tim. A good clarifying question. Nicely done.
it's a word you used a couple times there that I embrace in my professional life, and I don't understand in the life of my kids, and that's negotiate. negotiate is this word where, in my, as somebody who's worked in sales, I work for a large corporation now, not in sales, but in moving lots of big, moving, expensive parts around all the time. Negotiations generally involve consequence or some sort of benefit. There's something you gain from a negotiation. There's something you lose. And I, as a parent, and given Ginny's big focus in this, I have neither the carrot nor the stick. And I don't know how to negotiate when you have neither. And I even to the point where it's hard to incentivize something positively, because the removal of that incentive is there for a punishment. So I don't understand the context of the word negotiate without having any chips in the game?
Oh, that's such a good question. Oh my goodness. Okay. So here's what I do. Okay. So this is just my personal, I wish like my 17 year old is very angry at me right now. So this is like, I would usually ask him to come down, but he'd be super stinky. And it sort of has to do with this kind of stuff right now. Here's what I do when I've gotten so angry with them, or I feel like I need to negotiate with them, or the things that you're talking about, is I say to them, I hope this answers your question, which is, I don't want to have, if we're really struggling, I say, I don't want to have this kind of relationship with you right now. This kind of relationship with you. I don't want it. I'm going to have to take care of myself and like my boundaries or my mental health, my emotional health, but I don't want to be in conflict with you like this. And so if we're negotiating, or I'm like, you're presenting to me, and maybe you don't use the word negotiate, which is you instead use the word that you feel like that better serves yours. I mean, I could use another corporate word, but which actually makes a lot of sense to me, which is, can we please be in alignment? Like I need, like alignment to me makes sense. And so what I would do is I would ask them, so in these 2 minutes or 1 minute, is you are advocating your position. It does not mean that you will necessarily get everything you want, but it gives me the opportunity to hear what you want and why. And then from there, we can come up with a mutual a decision where everybody's dignity is intact, where people feel heard, whatever the words are, you know, obviously use like that dignity is intact. That's weird. But like where everybody feels heard and everybody feels like, even if they didn't get everything, they got something and they feel like they contributed, that somehow we're part of this family, we're in community together, and we're doing this together. It does not mean you get everything you want. One of the things that kids really need to understand, and this is about voice and vote, is that, and this is really a problem in our culture right now, is that, yeah, you absolutely have a voice. 100% young people have a voice. I've spent my entire life advocating on people having a voice. That does not necessarily mean they always have a vote. And so it's, you know, the deciding vote. And so, that's a really tough, painful spot, but I think alignment is probably better than the word negotiate. And I would enable them and be very clear that they have the right to advocate for the things that they think are important, based on the principles that I talked about. And then from there, you get to, how do you move forward? You know, you all know this, because I know Kathy and Todd say this, but just to reiterate, like, you know, punishment is not the word that I ever use with young people and my own children, because it doesn't mean to teach. That's what discipline means. So I'm constantly focused when I'm thinking about what is the appropriate discipline for young people, is what is the thing I want them to learn from the situation? And they might have to learn this 400 times, but what is it do I want them to learn? And that's how I come up with the consequences for the behavior.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I'll stop. I know we're taking a lot.
Yeah. I want to renegotiate, because I told Rosalind she would be done in 60 minutes and she's 65 minutes in. So, I think we can go on for a long time. Hopefully, Jenny and Tim, you feel a little bit more empowered as a result. And, you know, one quick thing, and maybe Sweetie, you want to weigh in on what Rosalind just said, and this is an oversimplification, but one thing that Kathy has said, and I think I've said it in the past when negotiating with our kids, is first this, then that. Now, that doesn't mean they're going to fall into line and do everything that you say. But for me, like, my work right now is when they get mad as a result of whatever boundary I just created, how can I stay in my own emotional integrity and not fly off the handle and not drop below the line and get into this reactive place? Like, when our kids go nuts on us because they don't like what we're saying to them, can I be the adult in the situation, because I have more experience, I have more years under my belt, and I can express my emotion in a healthy way? Whereas these kids, you know, they're learning this. So the other thing I would say is, like, I get that you're mad at me that I'm not letting you go out tonight. Like, I totally understand that. So, like, it's not so much like, Rosalind has helped us so much with the words to use, and I'm so thankful for that. And then beneath the words is, from what energy is it that you're communicating from? Because if you can figure out what energy you're communicating from, the words, even if they're the wrong words, that's much more impactful than the perfect words said in the wrong way. Mm-hmm. So, Sweetie.
Yeah. Yeah, I because of the time, I'm not going to add any new big thing. Just reiterate the, just like you said, the first this, then that, just like what Rosalind said, is we will discuss this. Like, one principle in our home is everything gets discussed. Whatever you want discussed is discussed, but you may need to first do that before we get to there. Like, or you first go to sleep and then we'll do that in the morning. Like, there, and it's not about winners or losers. It's about, there's a common sense element to it. And that's part of our job as parents too, is to help them with some self-regulation around the reality of life, that not everything is like when you want it. Not everything is a deep conversation in the moment. It's sometimes we got to keep going. Sometimes we have to, it's not now. Anyway, I just thank you, Rosalind. I have like two papers filled with all your words.
Yeah, and I never take notes when we do this. I was taking notes today. I never take notes when we have guest speakers.
I'm going to write down these five things for the girls.
Yes. So I'm sharing Rosalind's website, or a part of it. Rosalind, do you want to explain what it is we're looking at, what these things are?
So this is my website.
Yep.
And
I'm going to go to a few different pages. So this is the kind of on your homepage, owning up, books, blog, and I can't see because my window, and then speaking. And then these are the tiny guides we're talking about. And these are the individuals. Yes. And look at, they're $3, but today they're
$1.80.
But I think that might be because I clicked on the email, and I'm not sure why it's showing up as cheaper for me. But I think there's a coupon code in the email called holiday. I might be wrong. Do you know, Rosalind?
I think that, yes, it's in the what's it called? In the email that with a coupon code.
Yes. Yep. But I got that email. Most people did not. So
send it to them.
Definitely. And can you forward that? That would be awesome.
Yes, mm-hmm. I can do that. So these are just some of them: cognitive load, learned helplessness, self-compassion. And then if I can just go to this next page as soon as my, there we go. So these are all the tiny guides, and they sell them in these bundles, and you could get them all for, usually they're $40. You get them all for $24.
And gift.
These are like, do you have any nearby, Rosalind, within your arm's reach?
No, they're just things that you get online. We do have them printed.
So you print it. So I got one of these, I forget which one, I think it was about anxiety, and it's like 15 pages or something like that. It's manageable, bite-sized things. And like, this is this bundle is about emotions. This is about how your brain works, so on and so forth. Yeah. So anyways, all right. So I just wanted to make sure everybody knew about these resources. So,
well, thank you. Thanks so much.
You're welcome. Sorry, we went a little late. I try my best not to do that, but we just kind of got rolling. So, anything else, sweetie?
No, thank you, Rosalind. Thanks for spending time with us of your precious time. And we'll talk to you at the beginning of the year. So happy holidays and happy new year and, you know, brighter days.
Yes, absolutely. All right, you guys, take care.
Bye.
Bye, friends.
Bye.
The show will be up by the end of the day. Thanks, everybody. Take care.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.